Clark Ashton is my name. I live in Decatur, Georgia.
How long have you been a resident of Decatur?
Probably since, let's see, early 80s. I moved over here to Inman Park from Augusta in 1978, and then I bought my house over on Druid Hill in 1984.
And I bet you got it for a song in 84, or what would now be considered a song.
Probably, yeah. But I owe more on it now than I did then.
What's that?
I said I've refinanced it several times. So,
right. Back when they were just giving away money for the house?
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
It was free.
And what almost caused the world to collapse?
I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, I know you're a man who thinks about these kinds of things, right? Commerce and economy and
absolutely, yeah.
So what do you think about when, what was it, 08, where we finally woke up and we're like, oh, you can't just continually give loans to everybody for 17 different houses that they don't really live in or worth, or
I've been fairly isolated, I guess, in a way, you know, for some time, and that's kind of been my objective. Was to like remove myself from the grid in general, but yet at the same time sort of live, you know, in town enough to be a part of, you know, a community and to be able to interact with people, you know, and particularly, you know, I'm lucky because I have a spot on this hill where I can communicate through my work to, you know, the masses as they're going past my kingdom.
Well, do you think it's getting worse or better?
I don't know that it's either or. You know, people tend to, I think, you know, look at things from just generally a small perspective. You know, I mean, in some places in the world, things are terrible. You know, and in other places in the world, it's just, you know, coming up roses all the time. And so, you know, wherever you are at any particular time, you know, whatever issue it is you want to reflect on, you could probably find some good in some places and some horror in others. You know, so I just try to, you know, remain focused on trying to enjoy my life, you know, and do things that are meaningful to me and, you know, comment sort of in an obtuse way sometimes, you know, with my work on reflecting the world as I see it, but I don't know that I'm impacting anything in any particular way.
I mean, like if we were to look at, let's say, traffic, right?
Yeah.
In Atlanta in, I don't know, 1990, right?
Mm-hmm.
We would think, boy, this traffic is pretty horrible, having no idea how much worse it could get.
Yeah.
I mean, so from your perch, right?
Uh-huh.
Is that your backyard or your front yard?
Well, I have both. I mean, the whole thing, the land itself, the topography, there's a hill, it's Druid Hill. So the topography is a geographic feature, a topographic feature known as Druid Hill.
Right.
On Druid Hill is my mechanical riverfront kingdom, which the front and the back and the structure, the house that's on there is all part of the mechanical riverfront kingdom.
Right.
Within that kingdom, in the front, which is viewable by the commuters, is the commuter gallery. And so there's a couple of different thrones. There's one in the front, and there's one also in the back that serve different purposes.
I really should have met you over there now that I think about it. I shouldn't have had you come here.
Well, you can always come there.
But I think it would be good for, you know, the backdrop of this conversation. We could talk about certain structures. I usually have folks come here, but now that I think about it, it would have been cool to come there. But that's okay.
Well, we can do that again, and you can edit it all up.
Oh no, man! I just roll. This is how I create my art.
Okay.
I sit down, I hit record,
right.
And the only thing I typically ever edit is the beginning where I say, like, where you hear the sound of the mics picking up,
uh-huh.
And then at the end I cut. I just found that like people walk by and talk to us, and I just keep it all in there.
Right.
It's just like my form of expression.
Well, so the throne in the front yard is for communicating to the physical realm. You know, the commuters all sit out there in the morning and communicate with the physical realm and all the souls moving through chaos. And in the back, there's a throne where I can communicate with the spiritual realm, where I pick up signals coming through and tune them in with a tuning fork and bring them into my frontal lobe and sort of
a literal tuning fork?
Yes. Well, not the kind you hold in your hand, but it's part of, it's built into the throne that's in the back.
Right.
So the antenna's over the throne, and it picks up the smaller signals, and it tunes them in with this tuning fork that's part of the throne, and then the waves come down, and you're sitting there, and they go into your frontal lobe area where you conceive of abstract concepts of things like God and money. and figure out for yourself what you're going to do about them, because that's really the main point. That's kind of the two most powerful conceptual forces in the history of humanity, and those are the general motivating factors of things that make the world spin.
Well, these, I want to say these are interesting topics, but sort of a super lame thing to say. We've always been told money doesn't truly buy happiness, and I believe only in extreme situations, speaking personally, have I realized what that really means. Meaning where I had a little bit of money, but shit didn't work out like I thought it would, and I realized it didn't matter. Or I had nothing, but found joy or peace or happiness in something, and I thought, like, well, I don't really need this other thing called money. Yet, it's what most of us wake up every day pursuing, including sitting in cars for hours at a time to jobs we hate, people we hate, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a conundrum of sorts. And, you know, either you've got a lot of money and no time, or, you know, a lot of time and no money. And, you know, that's generally the way I operate, is with a lot of time and no money. But, you know, the important thing that I have found that works for me anyway is to use that time, you know, because in a sense time is all you've really got. You know, money is just paper essentially, and you can, like you say, it in itself is not going to bring you any real happiness, but you can get happiness with your time. And so if you take your time and apply that, you know, consciously to things you really want to do, at least for me, I've been able to do that without having very much money, luckily for me, because I can scavenge things that I need off the side of the road and put them together, you know.
So do people pay you for your art, or they don't pay you for your art?
Not very often, no. I mean, I sell a couple of things a year, but, you know, it's not really enough to survive on.
So what are you surviving on?
I've been renting out rooms in my house for decades. You know, I keep a little camper trailer in the back that's, you know, kind of my little area, and keep my sculpture studio and a music studio there in the yard, and then I rent the bedrooms out to Emory students mostly. And so
what do the students make of you for the most part?
You know, it's really shifted over the years, I think, and I'm really noticing it more now. But, you know, say 20 years ago, you know, I think they related to me more. And we were close enough in age at that point, you know, them being generally around 25. You know, they're mostly graduate students. And at that time, you know, I was 40. And so it wasn't a huge gap, but, you know, people at that time and that age were still close enough, you know, that they hadn't been at least born in the age of cell phones and computers and video games and all this sort of stuff, and so their whole life hadn't been spent, you know, in front of a screen. And but now I think, you know, now that I'm almost 60 and, you know, they're 25, and I just don't think they understand me at all. They don't really relate to the, you know, I mean, I've got all this, I like to think, is interesting stuff, and and they barely even notice that it's there or ask any questions about it. I mean, it's kind of weird, really, but, you know, it's what it is.
Well, I think it's – do you think it's a combination, though, of it's the age gap is bigger, but also that it is this generational thing? I mean, every generation thinks the younger ones are lazy, selfish, right?
The kids today.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, it happens. But you know what I've noticed, though, which I'd love to ask you about? I'm 45, and, you know, people talk about, you know, like, well, when you get older, this will seem different. I'm telling you, I feel like the world did not slow down until now for me. Like, 45 seems like, I'm like, whoa, like, I'm really, because, like, even, like, my body's starting to change, you know what I mean?
Right.
I can't keep the pounds off as easily, you know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
So, I'm really fascinated, because I think about it, and I think, man, I'm getting so old, and then it's like, no, I see a... How old are you?
60. Well, I'll be 60 next year.
All right. So I see a 60-year-old man, and I'm like, well, that's – he looks great. He's not in a cane. But I'm really – so the next 15 years, what do I have to look forward to? You know what I mean? Or even like my dad's 40 years older than me. So if I live another 40 years, that's a fucking lifetime, right? So tell me what 45 to 60 has been like for you, if you can even sort of put that together.
Well, interesting. Yeah, I kind of started falling apart probably about 50. Like, so, you know, I had to have an operation on one of my wrists, and then I had to get both of my lenses replaced in my eyes and in both eyes. I started going blind, and then I had to have an emergency bypass heart operation.
I mean, you look relatively healthy.
Yeah,
you're not a terribly obese person.
No, I mean, I'm active all the time. I mean, and that's, you know, that's a good thing. I don't sit around a desk, and, you know, I spend some time on a computer just because, you know, you have to some degree, you know, in order to preserve images and make images when you're an artist, you know, and making music and stuff. So there's some time that I spend sitting down, but I'd say, you know, 90% of my days, you know, I'm up and moving. You know, if you see my Druid Hill over there and ever want to come over and mow the yard, you'll find out what a job that is in maintaining that property, just, you know, mowing the grass, raking the leaves, picking up the sticks, trimming the trees, all that sort of stuff takes a lot of work. And then I'm also, you know, always doing some sort of masonry thing, you know, building foundations with bricks for my sculptures, and then moving big heavy metal things around and constantly building new work. So I'm a very physical, active person, you know, in that regard. And I go to the gym and go swimming regularly.
Do you like the Y?
Yeah, over on Claremont Road.
Or have you ever gotten pushback from neighbors or the city or anybody on, like, hey, you can't build all this stuff?
Yeah, back in 1996, somebody said or reported that I was, you know, running a business or something like that, and the county served me a notice saying I had to remove everything from my property in 30 days, but I wasn't, you know. In fact, at that point in time, I was working on my thesis project for my graduate degree in fine arts over at Georgia State, and, you know, it didn't have anything to do with business. I was, you know, I was just making something for my education, essentially.
So what was the outcome then?
I got some folks from the DeKalb Council for the Arts and from the county government, and they came over and looked at the situation and listened to me explain what I was doing, that I was just building an environment, that I was an artist and I was building my own environment, and it wasn't for sale, and so they kind of made it go away.
Do you vote?
I usually vote in the presidential election. I haven't voted much locally.
Yeah, me either, and that's the thing. Hello. See, people are just always fascinated. Some people will walk right by and, like, they'll tiptoe, like they think they're interrupting something.
Yeah.
And I'm always just like, yeah, bring it on. And I would say for you, I'm actually surprised, because you know, you seem to be a very, you know, boots on the ground Decatur kind of dude, right?
Yeah, you can say that.
So do you care who wins this mayoral election or anything?
Is that the mayor of Atlanta?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see. I don't vote for in Atlanta. I'm not in Atlanta.
Okay.
So I can't vote for that anyway.
Oh, okay. Do you just vote? What do you guys vote for? Like county seats, or I don't know. What do you vote for over there?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know either because I don't, I don't go out and vote. Like I say, the presidential elections, I think, is the only elections I've ever voted in my life.
Have you been paying attention to the daily insanity that we have with our current president?
Oh, yeah. It's quite entertaining.
Yeah, I go back and forth, though, between, because my wife will watch CNN, and I'll come home, and it'll be on, and usually after about 2 minutes, it hurts my head.
I can see that happening a lot. You know, a lot of people get all inflamed about everything, and I haven't gotten really inflamed or upset about it, you know, yet. I mean, I know there's only so much you can do. I mean, we could go off into a long discussion about politics and whatnot. That's probably not the best thing to do.
Well, only if you don't want to talk about it. I mean, because that's what we're here to do, is just chat. I mean, this is what, again, this is like, I mean, you've been featured before on things. Like, I saw, like, old, what's his name? CBS Good Morning guy, what's his name? Charles, whatever.
Charles Carrault.
It wasn't Charles Carrault, though, was it?
Who was it? It was, Osgood. Charles Osgood.
Is he still with us?
And there was Bill Geist.
Right. Are either of those guys still with us?
I don't know that either one of them is still working with the CBS Sunday Morning Show.
So when, what year was that?
That was like in 2000.
Okay, so not that long ago. I watched it. It may as well have been like the 80s. It looks so.
That was 17 years ago.
But you know what I'm saying? Like when you look, I looked at it and in my mind, like I would have guessed the 80s just because it's like, I don't know, the way that, I guess we've just come so far, like graphically or what have you. But I'm saying like this is, maybe they specifically want to talk to you about your art or whatever, but I just like, honestly, so did Steve tell you anything about me?
No, nothing at all. You know, I think he said that, you know, maybe y'all were partners or something like that, and that, you know, and that's really all.
So I'll tell you the byline for the show.
Okay.
Right? And you can maybe, so it's called the Atlanta Podcast, mm-hmm. right? Where we talk to the famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, or anybody else I find interesting.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So that's it. So I might have a chef on. I had the guy who, you know, Ryan Gravel?
I don't.
He's the guy who, this was his idea.
Oh, the Beltline?
Yeah. He was the Georgia Tech student.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've read his name then.
Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. And I plan to talk to politicians, sports people, whoever, uh-huh. anybody that I think is in. And my goal is that obviously it'll be interested if you are local, hyper local, whatever. Mm-hmm. But also, I feel like if we have a good conversation, it's quality content for anybody. Like, do you listen to any podcasts?
Yes. In fact, I listened to a couple of them just a couple of weeks ago. It was about these two girls who disappeared in Augusta back on, I think it was 1990, and they've never been found, and the sheriff's department won't answer any questions about them, and I think it was like a 5-part
was
series.
Did the Atlanta Journal do that? Who did that?
No, I don't think it was the Atlanta Journal. I have no idea who produced it.
Right.
But.
So there's so podcasts, like, they're the rage now, right?
Uh-huh,
and
right.
There's the serial storytelling like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's people sitting around sort of just like a radio show, and they just do it now via podcast, which to me are the least interesting.
Uh-huh.
It's like three dudes talking about whatever.
Right.
Like, to me, a typical boring morning radio show.
Uh-huh.
And then there's this kind of just kind of long-form interview where it doesn't have to be like, well, let's just pretend to promote your latest book or whatever. Let's just talk and see how
right,
that goes.
Right. I did see one. I listened to one, I guess it was about a week ago, about Evel Knievel. There was two guys talking about Evel Knievel.
Yeah, do you know the name of that one was?
Evel Knievel, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Well, I'd like the name.
I think
of
it was Evel Knievel Part 1 and Part 2.
No, I meant, but like the guys whose show it was.
No, I don't know. I don't know. My girlfriend comes up with this stuff. You know, she's more into following this sort of stuff than I am, and she just gets this entertainment for us when we're driving down the road.
Have you been married or no?
Yeah, I was married back in, let's see, when was that? Early 90s, I think.
It wasn't that memorable.
That's a long time ago. I think it was maybe like 90, 91, 92 through just 96,
just
98.
Just didn't last that long.
Oh, the whole thing was a 10-year relationship. I think five of it we were married. You know, like two working our way into it,
right.
Five in it, and then two or three working our way out of it.
And then kids or no kids?
No kids, no.
Did you ever want to have kids?
Well, I guess it crosses everyone's mind at some point or another. You know, it just hadn't worked out that way.
Right.
So maybe that's why I kind of remain a bit of a kid.
So that you don't have to have them?
Right. I'm my own kid.
And so you said you grew up in Augusta?
Right, right.
So I went there recently. Mm-hmm. I had gone to school there for a year, Augusta College, which is now, I believe, Augusta University.
Right.
And I was there a couple weekends ago, and I got to be honest, not much had changed in the 25 years since I had last been there. I was pretty disappointed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't think it was like, you know, you can drive through, you know, southern Georgia and hit some pretty podunk towns, but Augusta's supposed to be some sort of medium-sized city. I don't know.
You know, I think when I was growing up, it might have been like 20,000, 30,000 people, something like that. And I don't know what it is now, but, you know, when I was growing up, downtown Broad Street was an active place. You know, there were no malls. Malls hadn't been invented yet. And so right. you would go down to Broad Street to buy your shoes or your Sunday clothes or to go to the movies or stuff like that. Then as I was getting into, you know, my teens is when malls got developed, a couple of malls, and Broad Street totally died. And then I moved away, and at some point it started coming back. And, you know, and once I got my band going and got acquainted with some folks with a bar down on Broad Street and, you know, went down there and played a few gigs on Broad Street, and I just thought it was great. The place looked like it was booming on a Friday night. And,
yeah.
You know, it had been revitalized, and, you know, they'd done a lot of work down there. But, you know, I don't go back there very much, a couple of times a year.
What were your favorite records growing up?
Oh, growing up, my favorite records. Well, of course, you know, I was the age of Beatles and Stones, but, you know, Led Zeppelin and Allman Brothers and Jimi Hendrix and Neil Young and Bob Dylan and, you know, all of that stuff that old guys like myself like.
Well, you know, but it's kind of like this permanent thing, though, right? Like Led Zeppelin, there's always, I'm pretty sure we should check in with the kids today, but even as recently as a few years ago, I've met people younger than me that like, yeah, my older brother had Zeppelin, and like you get turned on to those. Or Van Halen, I think, has moved into one of those bands that you just, when you're 17.
I never cared much for them. I mean, that was kind of after my
You didn't care about Van Halen?
No.
Oh, dude, I feel like like they're just one of those bands that like speaks to you when you're 17 or 18.
Yeah, I was probably more like 27 when they came along.
Right.
And maybe that's why.
Yeah, I mean, so we talk about Steve. So Steve and I went to high school together.
Uh-huh.
So you're talking late 80s, early 90s. We graduated in 1990. And our friends, a couple of brothers, maybe you've met them. If he saw you, maybe you're on the same bill together, Adam and Eric Leland. Anyhow, they always had bands. And every weekend, we were either seeing them play or somebody else play.
And what's their band?
Well, it's been 20 different things.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
When I knew them, it was the Stone Souls. I think Adam, it was the A-Sides, and I think...
Or B-Sides.
I think it was...
I know Adam.
Yeah. If you know Steve, you probably know Adam.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I... Was it Steve that said that? Or was it... I was going to make a joke, but it wouldn't matter. morning. Anyhow, so we were... Like, I recently found this old list of all the shows we went to, and it made me think, like, when did I have that much time or free money to go see? Because we just saw everybody that, if they came to the Omni, we saw them, you know, and that was it. And as I've gotten older, I've spent very little money on concerts. Like, I couldn't even tell you, I think. Like, I think I've seen, like, I saw Elvis Costello and or Dylan, like, and that was even 5 or 6 years ago. Do you catch any shows?
You know, I do. Mostly it's when my girlfriend makes it happen. You know, she, like I say, she's the driver of our entertainment. I generally entertain myself, and I'm happy to do that most of the time, but she gets tired of me entertaining her, so she wants some other entertainment. But, you know, I mean, I generally forget what it is that I've done within about a week, if not a couple of days. So, you know, I've probably been to a number of shows over the last 6 months, but, you know, I couldn't really tell you what they are because I'd have to think about it for 15 minutes and go, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember
that. Did you see the Stones when they came a couple years ago to Bobby Dodd?
Oh, that would have been I saw them there a number of years ago.
Well, I saw them in 89. I remember that because when they came back, it was like, oh, wow, this is the same, play in the same stadium. And this was like 2 or 3 years ago that they just played it.
Yeah, I think I've seen them like 4 times. I think I saw them the first time was in Jacksonville in like 75. And then I know I saw them at Bobby Dodd. And then I saw them at the Georgia Dome. Didn't they play at the Georgia Dome? I'm pretty sure I saw them there.
Probably. Morning.
Morning.
Hey, good. And I saw him up at Shea Stadium one time. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. So when you said, you know, the age of people you grew up listening to, like, did any one of those specific bands or people make you specifically, like, want to pick up an instrument?
You know, I was really into Cream and, you know, Eric Clapton, his earlier stuff, like with Cream and Blind Faith.
Right.
You know, I really liked that a lot. And, I mean, that's when I started playing drums. Just getting into Wheels of Fire a lot and Disraeli Gears.
Did you see the Ginger Baker documentary?
No, but I've heard about it, and I need to see it.
He's kind of like you.
Okay.
You know, he's got his own thing going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, have you heard?
I've heard he was irascible.
Yes.
Maybe that's a term.
Yes, like you're more of the Southern gentleman version, but just very, you know, creative and has got his own little kingdom. And
yeah, I love
it's fascinating, dude. You got to see it. I think it's called I Am Ginger Baker or something. You got to see it, dude.
Yeah, I'll look that up. I'll look that up.
Do you watch much of the Netflix? Well, let me guess. Does your girlfriend tell you to watch stuff on Netflix?
Every now and then she'll pull something up on Netflix. And I can't tell you what the last thing we saw was. Like I say, I'll have to think about it for a minute to remember. I just don't remember these sorts of things.
Well, I think, I don't know, I don't think that's necessarily bad.
It's the moment. Oh, I remember one. We did like Bloodline. We watched
that's a good one.
That whole series was interesting.
Right.
Yeah. So we saw all of that.
Right. I think first season was the best, though, right? Or do you remember?
How many were there? I think, was there three or four?
There were three, and the last one, I think, even, it took a while to get good. I can't remember. And now we just lost old, what's his name? Yesterday.
I heard that, and I was trying to remember what character was
he?
He
was the dad, so he wasn't much in the recent seasons. Sam Shepard.
He was the one who died early?
Right, in the first season.
Okay.
Because he was the dad.
So he
showed back up in flashbacks.
He's the one who beat the kid.
Right.
I gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, he beats the kids, for those who haven't seen Bloodline. We won't spoil anything else. There's a lot of spoilers in that one, But the dad is but see that. Go watch Bloodline. This episode not sponsored by Bloodline. Please go watch Bloodline. Uh-huh. It's really good. What the hell were we talking about? You're talking about you'd rather just experience the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, that's what I try to do is be as happy as I can be wherever I'm at the time. You know, I mean, they say desire is the source of all suffering. You know, so if you spend a lot of time worrying about what you want as opposed to what you're having, then you'll suffer more. So in order to reduce my suffering, I try not to think about what I want so much.
So for those of us that have a hard time with that, those of us that are struggling real hard to get that raise, to keep up with the Joneses, or just to take our, you know, take our kids on a vacation, or how, what do you recommend?
You know, I think everybody has to find their own way. I mean, obviously, there's really no other way than to find your own way. And, you know, I mean, I'm always struggling to get a raise, too, but I just never get one.
But you seem okay with it. A lot of folks aren't.
Well, as long as I'm getting through the day, you know, if I think too much about it, then I would start worrying, you know, because it's always been a slippery slope, you know, and there's been numerous times where I just thought, okay, this is all about to fall completely apart, house of cards, getting ready to cave, and somehow something manages to work out, and I manage to hang on, you know, so it's, I've been very lucky, you know, in that regard, you know, and now it's getting to the point where I don't know. If the house of cards caved in, I think it's too late to save myself. I think it'll just be a van down by the river.
You know what I heard once? A guy said, and in the end, it's going to work out. And if it doesn't work out, it's not the end.
Yeah.
Right?
That makes sense.
And another thing I always heard is or that I like to hang on to, is we don't know what's around the corner. You know, when I lost, we bought a house in Kirkwood. It turned out at, like, the best possible time. It was right after the market crashed, and then that neighborhood blew up. And I had a business that started failing, and, you know, what do you know? We couldn't afford that house anymore. And we moved to the West End. And, you know, we thought, you know, it was the house of our dreams. My wife and I, it was our first house, our family, blah, 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 blah. And the number of things that have happened since we've moved have been, you know, that I couldn't have never predicted, right? And so it's like, oh, right? But, like, in the moment, it just feels like fucking disaster.
Right, right. But when you think you've lost everything, you find out you can always lose a little more.
Well, that's not very hopeful.
Well, it's either die or watch people die.
Is that what you found?
Pretty much at this point, yeah.
Well, when you do your thing, right, when you're sitting in one of your thrones, means you consider that meditation?
I guess when you ask me, I mean, that's probably is kind of what it is in a way, but, you know, but they're opposites, you see. If in the back, I guess it's really closer to a meditative sort of state when I'm in the spiritual realm. That would be more of a meditative place, and that's what that area is for. When it's the front, it's communicating with the physical realm, and so that's more of a social experience, like, you know, sitting on the front porch and waving at your neighbors going by. You know, that's kind of what that was put there for, was to recreate community in a transient environment. Because everybody's just leaving home and going somewhere else. You know, community's falling apart. And so that was sort of a way to recreate community in a transient environment.
Are you doing that every morning?
No, not every morning. But, you know, occasionally. And I like to do it in particular, like when school starts back up. Because, which means, you know, this week probably, because I think school started today.
Right.
For, and or at least somewhere it did, but when it starts in DeKalb County, you know, that's when it really gets good, because the school buses, you know, really slow down traffic, and so it gets bumper to bumper right there in front of the house for a couple of hours on and off between 7 and 9, and these school buses are just, you know, packed with kids that are, a lot of them, you know, are going to school for the first day or going to a new school for the first day. And it's, you know, it's an exciting time when you're a kid and it's the first day of school or the first week and you're meeting all these new kids and, you know, meeting all your new teachers and going, you know, and then they see this guy sitting on this throne with all this metal stuff in his yard and he's, you know, making these strange gestures, you know, standing up and waving around and stuff. And they look out the windows and some of them yell stuff at me. It's fun. It's just great fun to be able to, you know, express myself in a nonverbal but just a visual way to these you know, young minds.
So how much of that is you and how much of that is this sort of like character of you?
Oh, it's 100% me. And
this, so it's not quote unquote an act.
Oh, absolutely not. No, no. And I find that to be kind of frustrating, you know, over the decades, you know, people interview me either, you know, something like this or, you know, with these television people come or people that come to write about stuff. And I think this is part of journalism training or something, you know, because my ex-wife was a journalist, you know. She was first worked for the newspaper and then she became a TV journalist and stuff. And I learned through her that, you know, what they're often taught, or maybe all the time, is, you know, find the devil in the story. You know, this is what you're looking for, you know, somewhere in there. And so, but through my experience of, you know, being interviewed a number of times, it seems like they always come back to, oh, something like, oh, he, you know, this is interesting, but isn't it crazy? Right. You know, isn't that weird? Isn't that, you know, and it's like, I'm really not crazy and I'm really not that weird. And, you know, I'm very, very serious about what I do. I have fun doing what I do. And maybe that's confused as some sort of character or some sort of act, but it's not really. I'm just being myself and having fun and loving what it is that I do. It's not fake in any way, you know. And I've got this historic marker up that I put up a few years ago for the Battle of Druid Hill, which was this, you know, large installation I put out in my front yard. And some people had written, oh, this is a faux historic marker. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not a faux historic marker. It's a real historic marker that is expressing real facts about things that have happened here and that are happening in society. And then somebody will say something about, write something about my sweet holy church of the ever-loving eel man and say, oh, his ironic, you know, religion. It's not ironic. It's sincere. It's a real thing. And, you know, if you take the time and actually pay attention and read what it is that I write about it or what it is that I say about it, you'll see that I really mean it and I'm not joking. And it's not crazy. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit funny, but, I mean, if you start looking at other religions, for example, you'll find that they're pretty damn funny, too.
Right, except, so I've learned that, so I posted a thing on Instagram. It wasn't this year, it was last year. Happy Zombie Jesus Day, which I didn't create, right? Like, that's a joke people have been saying for the last couple of years. But the amount of flack I got, I was, like, shocked. Like, here's this cartoon zombie Jesus saying, I love brains or whatever.
Right.
People went fucking bananas.
You mean thought that you were being disrespectful?
You can't, to some people, like, that's not okay.
It's so true, but, you know, I don't know. I try not to be critical about other people's beliefs, because mine is that you should be able to believe anything that you want to believe, you know, whatever gets you through the night, you know, kind of thing. And but at the same time, you know, it's so often used to pit groups of people against each other, you know, for people that have differing beliefs. The important thing, I think, as far as belief and faith is concerned, is that it's all made up. Every bit of it. It's all comes from the imagination. It's all an invention by people. And, you know, so, and it's all designed to give some sort of order to what we ultimately can't understand.
Right. Order and meaning.
Right. And so, but it's all invented. It's all from the imagination. You know, so there's no reason that you can't invent your own or that I can't invent my own. And it doesn't mean that yours or mine is any less valid just because we don't have, you know, 10 million or 3 billion followers.
Yeah, and it's always been frustrating to me. So I was raised Jewish, and what I always liked about it was that, you know, Reform, not Orthodox, mind you, because Orthodox anything is usually pretty intense. But it was always kind of take what you like, leave the rest. Like, here's this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I liked the cultural points of it and the sort of the historical stuff, but I was never too hung up in the, well, this is my one God that you must believe in this certain way. And again, Judaism doesn't even really sort of preach that. And so that's why I've kind of, because as I was like a teenager in my early 20s, I thought, well, I guess if I wasn't Jewish, I'd be non-denominational because I believe in something bigger or greater than me, but it doesn't have to be this particular flavor.
I guess a lot of people just need that flavor. You know, they're spending too much time worrying about, you know, what kind of tires they're going to buy for their car, and it becomes, you know, easier to just get a job and buy your tires than to sit around thinking about where you came from, why you're here, and where you're going, and how that relates to other people that are trying to figure that out too. You know, oh, look, there's a book we can read, and it'll tell us.
Right.
You know, that way I don't have to worry about that.
Right. Well, I can tell you that's one thing about kids, is that the minute or the second or whatever it is, the millisecond that kid is born, you are instantly hit with, oh, I'm going to be dead someday.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, here, it's like that whole connection, right? There were people before me. There, here's the next one, and I'm going to be gone. Because, you know what I mean? It's fucking trippy. I mean, there's a lot of trippy things about being parents. But that cosmic thing happened to me when my first kid was born.
That's funny. You're the first person I've ever heard say that.
Well.
You know, but I totally believe you.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I have that experience with the things that I build. They're not living things. But, you know, when I'm making a piece of art, almost always when I'm halfway through it, I think I have got to finish this before I die.
Yeah.
I hope I don't die today because I really want to finish this thing.
That's great.
But, you know, I mean, so I spent a lot of time because I've made hundreds of things. And so you could say I've spent a lot of time, you know, worrying about dying, but, you know, and that's sort of silly.
Do you have some sort of will or plan of when you go, what's supposed to happen to it?
No, but I've been trying to work on that lately. You know, I mean, I really have been trying to come up with a plan because, you know, as I get older and things like my eyes and my heart start and my joints start fading and needing repair and stuff, you know, you really start to realize that, you know, something, there has to be some sort of plan put in place, and I've got to figure out a way to survive. You know, like I said, it's now that I'm pushing 60, you know, I can't relate very well to most of these, you know, college students that rent out my house, and so I don't suspect 70 is going to be any better.
but when you think about it, what do you think should happen?
Well, I want to preserve it.
Right.
And I think, you know, I mean, worst case scenario, at least somebody's going to have to come over there and tear it all down, you know, which is going to be a job, which I think is kind of funny anyway, you know.
And somebody's going to get paid to tear your shit down?
Yeah. They'll get more money for tearing it down than I ever got for building it. And, but, you know, I'm kind of been looking at over a number of years of kind of trying to set up a nonprofit of some sort to, you know, to preserve it. And
well, in the short term, can't you just do, I mean, like, I don't know, you know the site LegalZoom?
I don't.
Okay, so LegalZoom is like law for dummies. Like, you can set up a business, a will, like pretty cheaply, like a couple $100, and at least get it on paper that you want it to go to somebody, and then even if the whatever nonprofit isn't set up yet, at least like your girlfriend or a family member, somebody, so that it's not just like the city's like, okay, we're going to come in and knock it down. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right.
Like give the ownership to somebody, because that doesn't take very long to do, and then you can figure out, okay, and then as stuff gets figured out, you can change the will. Or, I mean, awesome. I'm giving you like advice that you're not asking me for, but
yeah, no, that's good advice, and you know, of course, numerous people have suggested that to me, not the exact same thing you're talking about, the LegalZoom thing, but you know, and I know that it needs to be done, and little by little I'm trying to make that happen, you know, and sort of maybe at the same time figure out a way that I can stay there and keep working. Like, for example, it would be nice if I could set up some sort of nonprofit and then sell the whole thing or sell half of it and donate half of it to right. this nonprofit, and then that would allow me to have some sort of funds to live on, and I would get to live there until I died, and then it would go to the, you know, the nonprofit would take it over, and some visiting artist could come have residency there and maintain.
See, this is all
place.
This is all great stuff.
Yeah, but the problem is that it takes a bunch of administrative stuff, and right. you know, and I just am not that kind of mind, you know.
Right.
I wake up in the morning and think about, okay, what can I build today, you know? It's like my time needs to be spent making things and doing that, and you know, to get involved in all this administrative crap is just seems like such a waste of my time.
Right. Have you heard of this thing called decision fatigue?
No.
Oh, it's like fascinating. So if you get up, let's say you've got 100 decision sort of points a day before, you know, when your brain just hurts and you got to stop working or just go to bed or whatever.
Yeah.
So don't waste your time on small things. So they say, like someone like Steve Jobs, he put on a black shirt and jeans every day because that eliminated that choice.
Right.
People that have the same breakfast every single day. So they're saving that up for.
I can see that.
Right.
That makes sense.
Right. And, you know, try not to sweat stuff. And that's what I think people don't understand about, like, is it's not just like a time thing when it's like when people, like, cause everybody likes to say, well, like, oh, I'm super busy. I got this job. It's like, well, like how much brain juice you're using. Like I got to waste. I just said waste. It's probably a slip. Maybe not like on my kids. Right. Like just getting them out of the house. Right. Just
right.
corralling them every day because they don't move their ass. You got to tell them 27 different times.
Right.
Anyway, but it sounds like you don't do a lot of that. You like, you know what you want to do. You get up, you want to create, you go to it, and you seem very, but I think that's why people throw that word out crazy, because they don't understand it. They can't grasp this concept of why don't you believe this set of values and why aren't you pursuing these things that we all believe in?
Yeah, and you know, I think what it really is getting away from the fear. I think there's an innate fear of dying and failure and being left destitute that drives most people to play by this set of rules. You know, that says you've got to go buy this car and now you've got to pay for this car. And so therefore you better have this job, because if you don't have this job, you won't be able to pay for this car. And then you're going to be homeless on the side of the road and so on and so forth. But so you have to, you know, you have to let go of the fear that society puts on you, that if you don't play by these rules, then you're going to be destitute. And it's challenging, you know, to be able to, you know, to try and do that, you know. And if I had children, I probably, you know, would be more concerned, you know, because now I've got these other lives that I have to look after.
Right.
You know, it would be a protection thing. But the only life that I have to look after really is my own. And so,
what about your dog?
She's a fine animal, isn't she?
She doesn't want to go run off. I was going to say, you could probably let her run around here.
She stays pretty close. I mean, she might... Yeah, I could probably let her walk up and down by herself over there and sniff around, but she doesn't seem to want to right now. She's good.
Have you seen much of this, by the way, this Beltline stuff?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, it is pretty fascinating that it's sort of, you know, if you build it, they will come kind of situation. As I've said to other people before, it's also because these neighborhoods already existed and it's sort of connected them in a cool way. Whereas where I live in the West End, there's not a lot there. There's neighborhoods, but there's not a lot of like commerce per se. So it's going to take a while before it looks like this.
Right, right. Yeah, it would be nice to live on something like this where you could deal with the pedestrian commuter traffic.
Right. Well, this is a pleasant Tuesday morning. You come here on a Saturday, and you can't move. I mean, if you wanted to go for a run or a bike ride, it's a lot harder.
I've heard that. I've heard it's like kind of like a freeway on the weekends.
Well, it has been called the hashtag glorified sidewalk also. Mm. Like, it's not really this great thing. It's just a glorified sidewalk.
Well, for a town that people barely walking. You know, it's nice to at least have a glorified sidewalk
right.
somewhere.
How did you get here today?
Well, I drove.
Of course. I don't know. You might have biked or taken a MARTA. You might have. And what do you drive these days?
I've got two vans and a school bus. The school bus doesn't move very much, but I have a 15-passenger 1990 Dodge Ram.
So you can throw big hunks of metal in it?
Right. And I'm also, you know, hoping to take it on a lengthy road trip, perhaps later in the summer, early fall. And then I've got a little commuter Ford Transit van that I, you know, buzz around town in most of the time.
What's the tour for? Like music?
Well, that would be nice, but no, just to get to have an escape. You know, I mean, even though I may really be escaped already most of the time, you know, I need an escape from my escape.
So is there any cities in particular you want to visit?
You know, I just love getting in the open spaces in the West, really. That's kind of what my goal is. And, you know, it'd be nice if I could make that happen, like, for the eclipse, you know, to get out in, like, Montana, Wyoming sort of area. You know, I like that out there where it's wide open, you know, and if I could get out there for the eclipse, that would be cool. And then kind of make a loop around, you know, Utah, New Mexico is awesome. In the wide open spaces, so to speak.
Hey, oh, I meant to ask. You said your girlfriend was a journalist. Was it Monica Kaufman?
No, that was my ex-wife. Her name was Connie Mayberry.
Oh, okay. Would people know who she is?
Some people might. I mean, she was on CNN for a while, back around 2000. 2001, and she was an anchor woman up in Chattanooga for a while, and I think she's in North Carolina now. I'm not sure if she's working for a TV station or what.
All right. Well, I think this was a good first chat for two dudes that didn't know each other at all.
Yeah, it's been lively enough, huh?
Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I got to come by.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely must.
I mean, the
weather's nice now, and like I say, you know, the school's getting back started, so if you wanted to, like, come over at, like, 7 o'clock in the morning, we could have coffee sitting out on the
throne. Oh, dude, we should totally
communicate with chaos.
Totally do that. Do you want to direct people to your website?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of them, actually, sure.
Well, I went to clarkashton.org, I think.
That's one, yeah.
What are your other ones?
druidhill.org. And then there's BoohooRamblers.com.
That's your band?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's the MechanicalRiverfrontKingdom.com. And I think there's another one.
Who maintains your websites?
I do.
Who's your host provider of choice?
GoDaddy.
Good old GoDaddy. Yeah, I use them myself. These questions are interesting to me. What do you know? I mean, you know, if you ever need help with that kind of stuff, Steve's real good with that.
You know, the problem is you usually have to pay people to do work.
Well, of course. You want to be paid for their time. Or you can figure out a barter system sometimes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Sometimes that works. Like, that's like, even in 2017, bartering does work. You got to lay down the rules pretty good first, because some people, one end feels like they're ripped off or whatever. But,
you know, the thing is, I'm just being a creative person. I already know what I want to see, and so the time it takes me to explain that to somebody else so they can do it, you know, I can pretty much get it done in that same amount of time myself and don't have to pay anybody to do it. So I do everything,
you know,
from digging holes and laying bricks to building towers and editing video and building websites. You know, I just have to mopping floors and harvesting souls from chaos and cutting holes in the sky.
Well, see, that sounds like fun to me. Is that weak? Is that hang on? Hold for the plane. My goodness, that's good. That's loud. If I come over to your house, can we do that? Can we harvest souls? And what was the one from the sky?
Cut holes in the sky.
Can we do that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because that sounds like a good time to me.
Oh, no, that is a good time. Yeah, like I say, I mean, people, and you'll probably laugh. you know, but I'll explain to you how real it is.
All right.
And we can laugh, and then you can go, yeah, that is real.
All right. Well, let's do that, dude.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for talking to me.
Right on.
All righty. There we go. Thanks so much for joining. Tell a friend about this podcast, how you heard about it, what you think about it. Go to the iTunes, leave us a review, what episodes have you liked? Who do you want to see on the program? Drop me a note or put that in the iTunes review as well. I can be reached at mattbdavis@icloud.com or mattbdavis on all platforms. Just do it. You're thinking about it right now. You know you want to. God, I've never done that. I know he's asked me to. Fine, I'll stop what I'm doing and do it. All right? mattbdavis@icloud.com or hit me in any of the socials. All right, everybody. Two episodes next week, promise. I gotta run.